Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
So tonight I'm introducing a practice and laying out a kind of a blueprint for this particular practice. And it's for people that who have already developed a meditation practice. So those of you who are new, you might want to consult other videos or my writings about what awakening is, what no self means, how it relates to compassion. So tonight's topic is a little bit advanced, not too bad, which is to say I'm not going to get into all the details of the general Buddhist understanding of things and general Chan approach to practice and realization. So I'd like to introduce about what is known as the three contemplations. So the first one is subjective, second, direct, third, absolute or extinguished. Okay. And the word contemplation here has different meanings for each of these three types. The first one, subjective contemplation, really means contemplating on the subjective perception. Of things, of ourselves. So this word guan in Chinese has this nuance of perception, observation, and of course contemplation. And what I mean by subjective perception in this first type of contemplation is has several qualities. One is an introspective process in which we are becoming more and more aware of how we perceive ourselves. So most people are unfamiliar with their own self-perception or subjective perception. They're only familiar with that which the self thinks of. Their ideas, their experiences, their narratives, their wishes, aspirations. Hardly do they ever perceive the perceiver. Right? And this is the reason why I said in the beginning that this practice is for people who have already established meditation, steady meditation practice, because they are more familiar with the nature of wandering thoughts, scatteredness in meditation, and the nature of their awareness. And most importantly, this second quality. First one is kind of introspection. Second one is self-consciousness. Self-consciousness. The nature of being aware of yourself. And many people mistaken this to be mindfulness. So you're doing a particular task and you are aware that you yourself are doing it. That's not really mindfulness. So more established practitioners would know the difference. That is just self-conscious, in which a self is being conjured, simulated, and then you're watching that self. And you're critiquing yourself. You're judging yourself. So there's a monologue going. So that's self-conscious. It's almost the root of self-attachment, self-referentiality. So that's far, far away from what mindfulness practice is. Mindfulness, a person's in the stream of and being one with the task at hand. So there's no separate thought observing the previous thought or a subsequent thought of doing. You're just completely one with it. Or you may say the person's present, right? Completely present to the person or the task. No wandering thoughts. Now, of course, self-consciousness may emerge, you know, every once in a while, kind of judging yourself, whether you're doing good or not, how well you're practicing mindfulness. So that's self-consciousness, right? So that comes up, you just treat it like a wandering thought, because essentially it's a wandering thought. The third aspect of subjective contemplation, or contemplating subjective perception itself, is the development of space, openness with which the thoughts and feelings come and go without being tethered to it, without being locked into the thoughts and feelings. Okay, it's a kind of natural outcome. So this is about being open, being open, and honest, being able to experience the workings of our process of selfing, if you will. So you can actually see it. You're not too upset by it. You're not tied to it. But you're able to see more and more of this. The first type, introspection, means becoming more aware of how we intend to think, our character, the things that we've done. You're reflexive. You can examine yourself. And this involves more kind of reflexive thinking. So there's cognitive processes of examining ourselves, objectifying ourselves, right? And then be able to reflect on the past, reflect on the future, becoming more aware of what we are doing, how we are living our lives. And this includes many different Buddhist practices. Encompass them. Observing precepts, the practice of precepts, the practice of virtue. All that is included in the first one. Also, in recognizing the different shortcomings. Of course, the good qualities within ourselves, also the shortcomings. We are able to develop, through introspection, a sense of remorse, contrition. And we can slowly work on changing these different aspects of ourselves. So we're not running away, we're not trying to conceal. We are facing them. And that is a kind of contemplation. So in this sense, the contemplation is loosely defined to mean reflexivity, you know, and reflection and so on, self-reflection and so on. And so this is part of the practice. So we can practice repentance, we can practice loving kindness. For example, repentance of our shortcomings. But when we discover a self that is fragmented, carrying a lot of hurt and pain, then we need to strengthen the self. So the practice of loving kindness will come into place. So this level of subjective contemplation encompasses different practices. It's a process of exposing, if you will, and embracing, and then working with different issues within ourselves. But subjective contemplation also, as I said, deals with developing an openness, right? And being more aware of the nature of thought, right? This tendency to create a self for us to observe, right? Self-consciousness, right? This tendency to do that, being able to distinguish that, and being able to develop space to embrace that, not be tied to it, right? So our habits of self-criticism, we're not good enough, you know, I ought to be this, ought to be that, right? All these different tendencies, able to see that for what they are, instead of being sucked into the vortex of this negative thinking, right? So see that as what? Self-consciousness, right? Just kind of ruminations, and see them for what they are, let them go. The more we do that, the more we'll develop the third aspect of kind of openness. Kind of openness. We allow things to come up. We don't suppress. We don't follow either. Things to come up. And we're very much more and more in tune with ourselves, subjective. Now, what's the purpose of this? This subjective contemplation, or contemplation of subjective perception. The purpose is to actually dismantle or the beginning of dismantling self-referentiality by recognizing the incongruence, the contradictions, the unreliability of our perception. So this is not for the beginners. Okay, the beginners, they we need to strengthen the self. They need to be more congruent. They need to establish a good, kind of foundation, healthy sense of self. Right? On the basis of this, we need to begin to dismantle the kind of self-perception. What do I mean by that? Because when you practice self-reflection, introspection, when you start to see the nature of thought, these monologues, self-consciousness, right? And when you start to see them, give them a lot of space, the comings and going, you will begin to recognize that much of our perception is actually incongruent, inconsistent. Despite the fact that we like to believe that we're consistent, I'm healthy, I'm thinking of this and that, my opinions of this and that, your opinion actually continue to change, and they contradict themselves. Right? You may have a view about certain things, but actually what stems out, the place with which the views stem, actually there's some conflict. There's some conflict. I like A, I don't like B, right? Our preferences, biases, right? Actually hidden within that our thinking process, feeling tones. You like A, you don't like B, but you like the fact that you don't like B. So within like, there's dislike. Within dislike, there's like. And we often contradict ourselves. So we have a great idea at the board meeting of doing something, right? We're so wrapped up in our own ideas, our own self-referentiality. When someone contradicts you, even though you see exactly how that other idea is really, really good, so much better than yours, you want to perpetuate your idea. Right? So, and then secretly, you examine their ideas or try to incorporate their idea into your idea, or whatever we try to do. So the sense of self-grasping, self-reference, and the way we live our lives, the way we relate to other people, a lot of contradiction, paradoxes, if you will. So begin the process, contemplation of self-perception or subjective perception, the purpose of which is to begin the process of dismantling our vested interest in me, I, mine. Okay, so loosen the grip of the way we think and the way we feel about ourselves and about things. That's the first. There are more things I could say, but I'll leave it like that. Second contemplation. It's called direct contemplation. Contemplation here, the word, can also mean perception. So direct contemplation, in other words, it's called direct perception or direct valid perception. Okay. Subjective perception are often unreliable, contradictory. And invalid, it's wrapped up with our sense of self-referentiality, of me, I, mine, the center of our thinking process. So there's really no way out. I mean, you can do psychotherapy to help yourself, you can reflect about yourself, you can do journaling, you can do all that. But it doesn't lead you out of liberation. It doesn't free you from it. The only way to free you, begin to free you from this self-reference, because whatever the self thinks of is a self-reference. Right? So whatever ideas on how to heal yourself, how to help yourself, how to better yourself, it's all self-referential. Right? The only way to do that is to enter into the practice or the contemplation of direct valid perception. So I teach a method called direct perception, right? Direct contemplation. This is not dealing with all the different layers of introspection, self-consciousness, and kind of self-acceptance, allowing, embracing all these things. This second direct contemplation is bracketing all of that, suspending that. Simply not engage with judgment, comparison. Most importantly, words and language, labels. So learning to not use these faculties and directly cultivate an ability to see things or perceive things for what they are. And this direct contemplation or valid perception has many different levels. Many different levels, quite complicated. It's a kind of rubric, umbrella, under which it subsumes many different types of Buddhist contemplative practices. And I laid out the theoretical framework, this rubric, in my new book, Silent Illumination: The Chan Practice of Natural Awakening, by drawing on the teaching of Yogacara, which is consciousness-only school. Okay, and this deals with the nature of perception, valid and invalid. So there are many components to this. I hope you're kind of read it, when it comes out, and try to reflect on it, and then we can talk. All right, but suffice it to say that there are different types of direct valid perception. There's sensory, there's mental, and there's yogic valid perception, or awakened valid perception. So usually the way I teach is subjective contemplation familiarizes oneself with the incongruence of our perception, the self-contradictory notions and ideas and feelings, exposing all of our tendencies. All the invalid perceptions. Direct contemplation focuses on valid perception. And the entryway to do this is through sensory valid perception or contemplation. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Of all these sensory faculties, the easiest is probably sight and sound. So the faculty of seeing and the faculty of hearing. And these two are pretty important too, because most of our afflictions, klesha, vexations, actually come from sight and sound. The third one would be just our own ruminations, mind. But mind faculty, to contemplate that, too difficult for, some meditators. Right? So it's best to start with something concrete. And within that, there are two ways. Right? Narrowly focusing on sight, like a blade of grass, a pebble, a rock, a tree, or openly on a whole field. A whole field. This is the kind of twofold general approach to direct contemplation. Okay. So narrowly, you pick it's best to do it coming out of meditation. So coming out of sustained meditation, whether it's at home or on retreat, under the guidance of a teacher, would be most ideal. Choose an object, a steady object, on which to meditate. If you choose a blade of grass, a tree, something concrete, that would be narrowing. So when you practice this, it's always, like I, teach in the kind of my general talks. Those of you who've been following me will know the strong emphasis I place in embodiment, right? Kind of somatic practice. So embodied, always grounding, relax, and grounding, and then engage. Right? So relax, ground, and just see. Without giving name, without giving label, without comparing, contrasting, discriminating. So temporarily suspend, learn to actually suspend all these kind of mental tendencies. At the same time, experience the sight in an embodied way. So you're grounded still. Not up here. Right, so the seeing becomes more of an experiencing, which happens to be experiencing through sight, but it's completely embodied. Okay? So your whole being is experiencing. And in the beginning, naturally, you will discover the extent to which this monologue of labeling, judging, comparing, discriminating constantly come up. You got to do more of the first type of contemplation, subjective contemplation. You got to do more of the distancing, right? Embracing, not so tethered, not so tied to it. Otherwise, you just get too frustrated. And they just come up. You're looking at a blade of grass, you're thinking, oh, it's green. Oh, it's kind of different green. Oh, it's a nice shape too. Well, I wonder, oh, it's a little bit withered on this side. Constantly. How many of you have experienced this? You look at something, it's like constantly this kind of thing, right, going on. So you need to close your eyes, stop looking, ground yourself, relax, relax, relax. When our mental processes are going, some part of the body is definitely tense. So you have to relax it. Diffuse the mechanism of discursive thinking, wandering thoughts, by embodying relaxation and grounding. And then open the eyes again. And in that immediacy of freshness, of opening the eyes, all at once, that blade of grass appears. Focus on that instant of freshness. That's the key. Focus on that instant of freshness in which all appears at once. It's that instantaneous experiencing in an embodied way that makes it valid perception. Why? Because our minds temporarily, our mind's tendency is to, in that raw experiencing of, say, a blade of grass, immediately what follows is labeling, contextualizing the whole process of symbology of the mind to label happens. We cognize what we're actually seeing. So the mind's tendency is to kind of ground itself into knowing exactly what we're seeing. If we don't know, then we're kind of lost. So the mind has to know what it is actually seeing, right? And that begins the process. In terms of the five skandhas, I'm not going to go into five skandhas, but just look it up on Google, right? In terms of the five skandhas, what I'm talking about, the instantaneous moment of valid perception, is actually the space between sensation and conception. Right, so form, sensation, conception, volition, consciousness, right? So direct valid perception of sensory practice is actually a subset of sensation. It's still raw. It's that immediacy of knowing, right? Bracketing all the concepts, right? Conception, the third skandha. So sustaining oneself in that freshness of experiencing. So if you find yourself a lot of wandering thoughts, ground yourself again, relax, and then the eyes closed, right? And then open that freshness, staying with that sight, without labeling. And the more we're familiar with this, the more we will experience the wonder of how things are without us meddling with, you know, what it's supposed to be, what it ought to be, what it should be, what it is. Just seeing. Now, we always begin with something innocuous like a blade of grass or a rock or, you know, prairie, a tree. As we practice this, more and more we can begin to extend to more complex seeing, such as a person. You see your favorite person and you see your mortal enemy, right? Or someone that you really don't like, or it just causes you some angst. You can even think about beginning to practice on that. So you gotta first start with a blade of grass or something, you know, neutral like that, pleasant in nature, right? And then in this process, we learn to come out of that loop of self-referencing, of the subjective contemplation. And whatever solution you come up in that state is self-referential. Learn to come out of that. Right? And the way to come out of that is to directly perceive valid perception. So narrowly, blade of grass, tree, rock, something, a pencil, apple, or openly, right? Openly, a whole field of things that's moving. Right? It could be sight, or it could be sound, whatever you like. It's valid perception, seeing things as they are. Is that awakening? No. It's a temporary bracketing of the discriminatory mind, the labeling, discursiveness. Is there a subject, object there? Yes. There's a subject and there's an object. But it's a little better than, you know, being self-conscious and always in the mode of rumination, imagination, infusing whatever we experience, grafting all of our clutter right onto what we are seeing. So you're actually suspending that, coming out of that. So it is a little better. But the subject and object is still there. Unless one gets to yogic valid perception. You can read about that in my book. And this last one, I reserve it for absolute contemplation. Actually, it means contemplation extinguished, in which the subject, object suddenly vanishes. Is there a perception? Of course there's perception. Is there contemplation? Not in the sense of contemplating, reflecting, using the method. No. So contemplation extinguished, or absolute contemplation, that word contemplation just means could mean experience, right? Or awakened experience. So this third part is the subject and the object vanishes. Now some people may think that, you know, direct contemplation, the second one, is a kind of learning to be objective. Learning to be objective, you know, without, you know, injecting our sense of self onto what we're seeing or what we're hearing. Yes, in a sense, you could say that, but there's really no objectivity. Now, this may sound weird to you. So what do you mean there's no objectivity? Because objectivity is just a collection of subjectivity. Right? So it's just a consensus of how everyone's kind of subjective, self-referential feelings and thoughts are accepted as the norm. Right? We can easily see this. What used to be objective truth is constantly being overturned, not only in our social world, but also in science, objective truth. Science is a process through which truths are constantly being invalidated, basically, and then updated, and then modified. And that's what we call progress. But even socially, you know, the consensus, what seemed to be the norm of things, seem to be objective. It's just the way things are. Like slavery, for example. You know, a couple hundred years ago, the way things are is just, you know, it's just slaves. That's objective truth. Everyone accepts that. But is that really good? Is that really? Even though it seems to be objective norm, but that objectivity is just a collection of everyone's own subjective self-referential notions and ideas. Right? So then it gets overturned. And the repercussions of that we are still experiencing now. We're experiencing racial reckoning now. Right? So all these so-called truths and objectivity, there's no such thing. So to what does the contemplation extinguished rest? What criteria does it rest on? What does it mean to transcend subjective and objective? It means not injecting yourself. This means gaining, losing, having, lacking, benefit, or harm. It doesn't even arise. At the same time, it also doesn't consider objective norm of what everyone else tend to think is right or wrong. So what does it rely on? Selfless wisdom. Wisdom. So, for example, you see a criminal, mass killer, or the most terrible guy in the world, drowning. Do you save the person? Now you may think objectively, you know, that saves us from putting this person into jail and going through all the bureaucracy process of prison system and then capital punishment and whatever the norm that people come up with. Right? Just let him drown. Saves us the trouble. No. From the perspective of wisdom, immediately save the person. You don't say, oh, am I going to get drowned? Or I don't know how to swim that good. Maybe I should. No consideration of self-referentiality. Immediate. Wisdom response. Immediately. Save the person. Now, as a person, you're saving a person that's killing everyone. Right? Save the person. Right? Now, after the person is saved, then you can figure out a way to make this person not kill again. Reform. Or whatever needs to be done. Right? So, irrespective of your self-concern or objective norm of what everyone else thinks is right or wrong, irrespective of that, you do what needs to be done, what can be done. That is wisdom, selfless wisdom. And that selfless wisdom has no opposition, has no enemy. That is compassion in action. Now, a lot of Buddhist teachers explain this in terms of, you know, compassion and wisdom like two wings of a bird. Right? Actually, they're the same thing. From the Chan's perspective, same thing. Compassion is wisdom in action. It's not two separate things. It's just the essence and function of being with ourself. Right. Now, on a conventional level, do you know that the person is drowning? Of course. Is there an object? Of course. Do you know red light from green light? Do you know right from wrong? Of course. Actions are no longer tethered, locked into these conventions. You see the ability to see right through them. Why? Because all these conventions actually stem from self-attachment, self-referentiality. whether it's government law, civil law, or some kind of policy in a company, or whatever, or just our upbringing, the values that we hold, right? The norm of your family, all stem from that. So you know what these norms are, and you know conventionally you follow, but they no longer take hold. So that would be contemplation extinguished. This would be the yogic valid perception, or absolute contemplation. So between subjective contemplation and absolute contemplation, subjective contemplation is becoming more in tune with our subjectivity, subjecthood. And the contemplation extinguished is the transcendence of not only the subject and the object. And in the middle, direct contemplation is a practice, it's a method, right, of temporarily moving ourselves out of this circular tendency of self-referencing, out of that, right, to learn to suspend our judgments and biases and self-referential tendencies, and then grounded in practice, grounded in our meditation, the person, if one continues to practice like this, under guidance, with the correct view, then it's possible to liberate oneself from self-attachment. That is Buddhist awakening. Okay? I'll stop here. Any questions?